This is Fresh Air Weekend. I'm David Bianculli, editor of the website TV Worth Watching, in for Terry Gross. You know those funny hip-hop videos on Saturday Night Live. Videos like Bleep in a Box, bleep being a word we can't say on the radio that's slang for a guy's privates. That one featured Andy Samberg and Justin Timberlake. And then there was Three Way, which featured Samberg, Timberlake, and Lady Gaga. They're part of SNL's series of digital shorts. Our first guests are the trio that wrote and created those shorts. Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taccone. Together, they go by the name The Lonely Island. They met in junior high in Berkeley, California. After college, they all moved to L.A. and started to write and star in their own comic video shorts. In 2005, they were all hired to work on Saturday Night Live. Andy Samberg as a cast member, Akiva Schaffer and Yorma Taccone as writers. The three now do projects on their own. Andy Samberg has starred in numerous films and has a new sitcom coming to Fox in the fall called Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Akiva Schaffer directed the film The Watch, and Yorma Taccone played the pretentious artist Booth Jonathan on the HBO series Girls. They continue to create digital shorts, even though they've left SNL. The Lonely Island has just released its third album of hip-hop-inspired parodies called The Whack Album. Terry spoke with them last Tuesday and began with the track YOLO, which features guests Adam Levine and Kendrick Lamar.
YOLO, you only live once. The battle cry of a generation. This life is a precious gift, so don't get too crazy. It's not worth the risk.
You know that we are still young.
Cause it's bad for your ears. Your friends will all be sorry when they can't hear.
And stay the hell away from drugs cause they not legal. Then bury all your money in the backyard like a beagle.
Cause you should never trust the bank, they've been known to fail. And never travel by car or bus, boat or by rail.
And don't travel by plane, and don't travel at all. Build a bomb shelter basement with titanium walls.
And wear titanium suits in case pianos fall on ya.
And never go with saunas cause they're crawling with piranhas.
And never take the stairs cause they're often unsafe. You only live once, don't let it go to waste.
Andy Samberg, Yorma Taccone, Akiva Schaffer, welcome to Fresh Air. Thank you so much for coming. So let's start with YOLO, which we just heard, which usually means you only live once, but in yours it's you ought to look out. So which one is more of the motto of your life? which one were you more brought up with?
You know, our version begins as you only live once, and then by the end, the conclusion is you ought to look out. So I think it's kind of like telling our story of getting older and using more discretion and more caution. But it's also a cautionary tale. Like, you ought to look out, and you only live once. It's somewhere in between, I think, is what...
Yeah, you can go far. Right. You can go too far with you ought to look out as well until you're just basically sitting in a room by yourself, rocking back and forth, holding your knees and not wanting to go outside.
Howard Hughes-ing it, so to speak.
Yeah, so that could be bad too.
Well, my favorite line is that there's no such thing as too much Purell.
Thank you.
We did not get paid for that. That was not a sponsor.
I hadn't even thought of that.
No, we actually didn't. The way you said that made it seem like it was open-ended, like maybe we did get paid for that.
Oh, right. No, we didn't. Yeah.
Now, on your new album and on, you know, some of the digital shorts, you have like real hip-hop stars on there with you. So what are some of the things that you've learned from working with people who do this seriously for real?
that they're better than us.
Yeah, it's harder than it seems.
We learned a lot about recording from Justin Timberlake, legitimately, because that was so early on when we did the first one, Blank in a Box. I don't know if what you're allowed to say.
Yeah, not the thing that's in the box.
Okay, great. Richard in a box. Yeah.
Richard in a box.
But that was pretty early on in our comedy music career. So we were still really just doing, like, teaching ourselves how to use the stuff and didn't really know how to use, like, Pro Tools or any of that stuff. And we never used engineers. We would just be in our office. So when he came and did that song with us, he taught us, like, 10 things, I would say, that we still use to this day about just proper recording and kind of little tricks about using, you know, the left speaker versus the right speaker and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
And stacking vocals, especially on a singing part, things like that. You know, every song we make that has a singing part, I'll do a temp vocal and sort of come up with a loose melody that, if you listen to the early one versus what we end up with when we get a professional on it, sounds vaguely similar, but obviously one is professional and one is temp. But even when we do that, just to get a feel for how big and how poppy we want the song to sound, we'll use those tricks that we learned in terms of stacking vocals and possibly even doing, you know, flourishes and hypes and harmonies and that kind of stuff.
And we'll be very meticulous with that too. Like, Andy will do counter melodies and all sorts of things like that, you know, just to make it sound right so we know if it's going to work or not.
They might be counter melodies. We have no music training.
Yeah.
So we're sort of just winging it.
We have no idea. Like, well, it sounds bad, so that might be counter to something that sounds good.
It's counter to what you want to hear.
Well, if you're just joining us, my guests are Andy Samberg, Yorma Taconi, and Akiva Schaffer, the three members of Lonely Island, the group that did all those great digital shorts, music, like hip-hop digital shorts for Saturday Night Live. Now they have a new album, and that's called The Whack Album, and we should hear another track from it. So since we were talking about Justin Timberlake, why don't we hear Three Way, which is really hysterical, and it's been a digital short on Saturday Night Live, and now it's on the new album. So I'd like you to talk about how you came up with this idea, and the idea is basically, it's cool for two guys to be together if it's a three-way with a girl in between.
How do we come up
They're
with
looking
it?
For any excuse to get into bed together, these two guys.
Yeah, that's the real.
There was the third in the trilogy of these two guys, these two characters, and, you know, in the first two, there were all sorts of allusions to, like, how into each other they are. And we felt like that was sort of the natural next step.
How deeply they were looking into each other's eyes and how close they were.
Yeah. They're best friends who find each other extremely cool and sexy. But it was also a case of just SNL circumstance, which was Justin was hosting and Lady Gaga was the musical guest. And we knew that for the third one, it would be a real anti-upper to throw Lady Gaga into the mix. And naturally, when you add a girl to the two guys, it turns into a three-way. So then we had to think of a comedy angle for that, and that's what we came up with.
And were they both willing, or did you have to convince them?
Oh, they were willing. I mean, Justin, when we did the second one, Mother Lover, me, Keeve, and Yorm were the more hesitant ones. We were like, I don't know if we want to go back to that well, because, you know, D in a Box went over so well. I don't know if we want to mess with something that is generally liked, and if we don't do it, we're safe. And Justin said, that's exactly why we should do it. Because who would have the audacity to do it again?
That was very similar on Three Way as well. I mean, we had the idea really early on in the week, and usually, you know, we only come up with the idea on a Thursday night, record it Thursday night, and start filming Friday into Saturday morning and start editing Saturday morning until the show airs. And that's basically the you know, natural way that we did any of our digital shorts. And this one, we actually had the idea on a Monday, and then the three of us were totally hesitant the entire week, and Justin kept being like, no, it's great, just do it.
He's very confident. And to answer your question, Gaga was 100% into it.
That's like a lot of work to do in a few days. I mean, because
it's like your
videos, it's like there's an edit every few seconds, and the scene keeps changing, and there's costume changing. It changes. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we don't work there anymore.
We still put the exact same amount of effort into the videos that we're making now. It's just that we have, like, maybe three more days to do them.
It's really intense. I mean, the credit also to SNL and to their crew and their system that's built in to be able to pull something off that fast. They allowed us to do it in that crazy schedule. And, you know, they had props and crew of, you know, people putting together sets overnight on a Thursday for a Friday shoot. Which constantly, when we come up with an idea late Thursday night and be like, okay, this is it. And then all these people have to be like, okay, all the wardrobe and everybody in the wig department.
We need a horse head and a hot air balloon basket.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you get so used to it that then you show up on Friday morning and you're like, where's our horse head? And they're like, guys, you gave us the song at like 5 a.m.
Yeah, we're having a puppet master make it.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it's an incredible machine to be a part of, and it's the only way it can really happen, is to have hundreds of people all working towards this one goal at the same time, because there's no choice, because it's airing Saturday.
Okay, so this is Three-Way by Lonely Island, and it's from the new album, the Whack album, and we're going to hear Andy Samberg, Justin Timberlake, and a little bit of Lady Gaga. She's more prominent on the video than she is on the song. So here it is, a cleaned up version. Three way.
Your mom says hi, jinx. Yeah, 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 yeah. Everybody's having sex.
You know, I just got a page from a girl that I met last week at the Payless.
Shoe socks. I also have a cutie to call who loves the way I knock on her boots.
Well, it's time to Mac. Let's handle that. In 2 to 6 hours, we'll meet back then. We're broke. Now let's shoot.
Roll up to her crib with some Bartles and James.
Hop on the bus with the Alizé.
Now hold up, player, what you diggity doing here?
I should diggity ask you the same.
Let's just say,
boys, I want you both. I hope that you think that's cool.
Say words.
I know most guys won't freak together,
but she forgot about the golden rule.
I hope it's okay when it's in a three-way. It's not gay when it's in a three-way. With a honey in the middle, there's some leeway. The area's great in a 1-2-3-way.
That's Three-Way with Andy Samberg and Justin Timberlake and Lady Gaga from the new Lonely Island album, the Whack album. And my guests are the three members of the Lonely Island, Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taconi. And that's just, like, so funny. And
thank you.
And Andy, what do they do to you? Is there processing on your voice, or did you just, like, use a different voice on that?
I think maybe we do drop my voice on those ones in particular.
Slightly. Ever just so slightly pitch shifted down.
To make you like a little more seductive.
If I had just woken up like right now, I could probably pull it off like, hey, girl.
That sounds pretty good.
That's pretty close.
I got something real important
to man,
get.
You're making me real attracted to you.
So just sit down.
Oh, don't. Please.
And listen.
Oh, it's too much.
You'd never say anything. Tell me you'd never say anything like that in real life to a girl.
No, definitely not. In real life, I go, hey, I think you're really pretty and neat. And
do you want to go to the library with me?
What's your take on this week's Game of Thrones?
So when you started working together, when you were, what, in junior high school?
Yeah, we were all in different sort of goofy music groups. I was in a group with two friends of mine called Strike Three, because we had all been dissed by girls, so we had all struck out.
So did you do for real music or comic music?
No, it was all jokes. Okay. All joke rap music.
Yeah, me and my friends would record ourselves on, you know, little boom boxes with a record button on cassette and do, like, comedy raps that we'd written in high school.
Yeah.
I would say we were people who were very, very into music. Not just people who just kind of like music. I'd say that was more our training. I would say that making whatever these little groups they're talking about are were not ever like, there was never any goals on it. There was no internet back then, so it wasn't like we were putting things online or anything.
I will say I wasn't a part of it, but I feel like I remember the first actual Lonely Island piece of audio, which is Akiva and Yorma recorded themselves over this skit from a Wu-Tang Clan album. And it's like this really intense...
it's very sad, actually.
It's a bunch of, it's all the Wu-Tang and people on their block being like, yo, did you hear this guy, Shaheem, got shot? And everyone's like, oh my God, no. And it's like really intense. And then Keeve and Yorm dubbed themselves over it going, oh no, not Shaheem.
Wait, is he the guy from... Oh, sorry, I interrupted. Sorry, what were you saying?
Just us being super lame.
There's so many members of the Wu-Tang Clan, you can just slip a couple nerds in there.
Just two nerdy guys who get railroaded.
Part of the gang.
So what were some of the biggest differences between the music that you loved when you started doing this and the lives you were actually living?
Well, you know, we grew up in Berkeley, where hip-hop and R&B was the predominant culture, but we're, you know, tiny little white dudes. We weren't, like, living the rap life at all. We just loved the music. We definitely were fans of it and appreciators of it, but from an outside perspective, and I think that's where our comedy comes from. It comes from a love for what that music is and what it represents, but also always drawing a clear line to let everyone know that we don't believe that we are part of it.
So you all got on Saturday Night Live at the same time. Andy is a performer and writer, and Yorma and Akiva as writers. Did you have a joint audition, or did you each audition separately?
Auditioned separately. I had been doing a lot of stand-up, so I auditioned first. And then, you know, we had been writing for the MTV Movie Awards, and Jimmy Fallon was the host. So he was there along with Steve Higgins and Mike Shoemaker, who were producers at SNL, and a bunch of SNL writers came with them. And we got along really well with all of them. So Jimmy and Higgins and Shoemaker recommended us to Lorne. So I came in and auditioned, and it went well. And then they said, you know, these guys are best when you have the three of them together, you know, which was correct. So they offered Akiva and Yorma to audition as well. Yorma did audition. And Akiva, who had no interest in being a cast member, opted to just have a writer's meeting. It went well enough that I got hired to the cast, and Keith and Yorma both got hired as writers. But I think what they did not realize they were getting was two writers who also happened to be really good directors. And that was...
Thanks, Andy.
You're welcome. It's part of the story. Yep. you know, because when we brought in...
We were
in,
not hired
like,
to make shorts.
No, not at all. But, you know, the classic thing that we have always done, and I think Keeve is really the spearheader of that, is to be really proactive and to just, if you have an idea you like, go out and make it. And then you don't have to explain to people why something's funny. You can just show them. So these guys went out and shot a video on their own called Bing Bong Brothers and brought it in and said, would you ever air this? And they were like, well, we're trying to break all these new cast members, so it would be confusing to put something on with you guys in it. But definitely continue to do these and bring them in, because we always need pre-tapes to turn sets over during commercial breaks or when we're in an act break. So we just started shooting them on our own. And the third one we made was Lazy Sunday. And after that, they were like, okay, you guys are a film unit. Keep going.
Yeah.
Andy Samberg, I have a question for you. When Bill Hader was on the show, I think it was in the past year, he talked about his audition for the show. And he said, when he was auditioning for his show, on the way up the elevator at NBC to audition, he met you in the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw that you had all these props. Well, I'm going to let him tell the story. Here's a clip of him, of Bill Hader telling the story about meeting you on the way to his audition at Saturday Night Live.
I remember getting in the elevator for my audition, and there was a guy next to me who had a backpack full of props and wigs and things, and I went, oh my God, that guy is so prepared. I have nothing. I have no props. And that was Andy Samberg. And Andy Samberg said he was looking at me going, oh, that guy has no props. He doesn't need props. And that was the first time we met. It was in that elevator.
Okay, so that was Bill Hader on Saturday Night Live not too long ago. So Andy Samberg, is that an accurate portrayal of what happened? Did you see him and think, oh, he's so confident he doesn't even need props?
Yeah, I thought I was dead in the water. And by the way, I was right. He did not need props, and it's embarrassing. You know, I mean, the difference between Bill and I has always been a joke between the two of us, because we are really good friends and we do have a lot of respect for one another comedically, but we do such different things, which I think is what allowed us to be and stay close throughout our time at the show. Because I look at him and he's someone who is like a master impressionist, can drop in and out of characters really well, can play sort of, you know, adult characters really well, like game show hosts and news anchors and stuff. And I was always kind of like the like floppy younger guy who was making fake rap videos. looking back, I wish I had used less props in my audition.
It's always the most embarrassing point, like watching someone at the end of their audition have to clean up all of their props that have been strewn around the stage.
Just
like,
slow gathering.
Like, well, thanks a lot, guys. And over silence, like collecting their things.
You can
and
hear like
out.
The buzz of the lights in the studio. Like, okay, well, I'm just going to pick up this dreadlock wig.
And this spinny hat.
When I was looking back at early Saturday Night Live sketches that you were on, Andy Samberg, mm-hmm. one of the things I noticed was your really shaggy haircut.
mm-hmm. Hard to miss.
Yeah. So when you showed up with that haircut, did anybody say anything?
When I had my final meeting with Lorne before I got hired, one of the questions he asked me a few questions. He said, so do you think you can do this? And I said, yeah, I like to think I could. And he said, and you feel like you could live in New York? And I said, yep, I actually lived here for 2 years at NYU. I love New York. And there was a long pause, and then he said, would you consider cutting the hair? And I said, I will shave bald if that's what you want. I really want to work here. And he laughed and said, okay. And then I left, and then the assistants in his office said, so? And I was like, did I get it? And they were like, yes, you got it. And I was like, oh, great. And then I called my parents and cried.
The new Lonely Island album, one of the things that it jokes about is getting older. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for Akiva, he's a parent now. He has two kids.
Yeah.
So what does that mean to you in terms of the kind of comedy that you do about hip-hop?
Well, I mean, there's a trend in hip-hop of being more mature and getting older for real right now as well. So it actually coincided really nicely for us in terms of, you know, certain songs on our album, things like Diaper Money and YOLO, that are more about being an adult and the joke of bragging about the responsibilities that come with being an adult. And
yeah, we figure if Jay-Z can rap about how he can only wear button-ups now, we can rap about how we're married and how great that is.
And how we've got a great grave plot lined up.
We can't wait.
Andy Samberg, Yorma Taconi, and Akiva Schaffer, thank you so much. It's really been such great fun, and congratulations on the new Lonely Island album.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor for us to be on.
Andy Samberg, Yorma Taconi, and Akiva Schaffer are the members of the Lonely Island. Their new album is called The Whack Album. Kanye West has been busy in both the music and the gossip worlds. He's just released a new album called Yeezus, and just became a father when his girlfriend, Kim Kardashian, gave birth to a girl. Rock critic Ken Tucker says West's constant blending of his public life and his music makes his new album all the more striking, and sometimes more problematic.
Uh-huh, honey.
What you doing in the club on a Thursday? She said she only here for a girl birthday. They order champagne but still look thirsty. Rock Forever 21 but just turned 30. I know I got a bad reputation. Walk around always mad reputation. Leave a pretty girl sad reputation. Start a fight club, Brad reputation.
Kanye West is having some serious fun with us on his new album, Yeezus, starting with the title. It's a play on his nickname, Yeezy, and his penchant for placing himself in cultural importance just this side of the Son of God. And that's just the first clue as to how assiduously aggressive and transgressive West wants to be on this album. Over the course of this collection, he cuts across boundaries of musical genres, historical references, and good taste with slashing rhythms and precise wordplay that will strike some as lacking in hip-hop beauty. My reaction upon first hearing the whole album all the way through has remained firm throughout subsequent listenings. This is a strikingly unified, eloquently ugly record that demands, boldly but also desperately, beseechingly, to be heard.
For my theme song, right. My leather black jeans on, right. My by any means on, partin' I'm getting my scream on, right. End of the kingdom, right. But watch what you bring home. You see a black man with a white woman at the top floor, they gon' come to kill King Kong. Middle America packed in, right. Can't they see me in my black skin, right. Number one question they asking, be question you asking, right. If I don't get ran at my Catholics, right. It comes to conservative Baptists, claiming I'm overreacting like the black kids in Chirac, bitch.
That's Black Skinhead, which samples Gary Glitter's Rock and Roll Part 2 to bolster its rebellious lyric. It's too easy to hear a lot of the sentiments on this album as merely arrogant, a quality West has done little to downplay in a recent interview with the New York Times, comparing himself most favorably to innovators such as Walt Disney and Steve Jobs, or in a song title such as I Am a God. But that song has already yielded the funniest phrase that's been repeated all over the internet, with the highly self-aware Kanye posing as a pampered star, snapping in a French restaurant to hurry up with his order of croissants.
I am a god, so hurry up with my damn massage in a French-ass restaurant. Hurry up with my damn croissants. I am a god. I am a god.
I am a god.
Talk to Jesus. He said, what up, Jesus? I said, I'm chilling, trying to stack these millions. I know he the most high, but I am a close high. Mi casa su casa, that's a Costa Nostra. I am a god.
Kanye West remains a good collaborator. The numerous producers include the French duo Daft Punk. And Rick Rubin, who's worked with everyone from Black Sabbath to Johnny Cash, says he was brought in by West near the completion of the album to help strip down the sound. One result is that this album's diverse, cacophonous music fills even his most hostile lyrics with dread. This dread, I think you have to hear it in many moments as the cry of a man who wants the world to know how vulnerable and self-conscious and shrewd he is every time he presents a resentful, tough guy, I'm a genius image to the world. I should also say that this next song, as do many here, contains a disparaging term for women.
Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Blood on the leaves.
I just need to clear my mind now. It's been racing since the summertime.
Please.
Now I'm holding down the summer now.
Please.
And all I want is what I can't buy now.
Cause
I ain't got the money on me right now. And I told you to wait. Yeah, I told you to wait. So I'ma need a little more time now. Cause I ain't got the money on me right now. And I thought you could wait. Yeah, I thought you could wait. These bitches surrounding me. Oh, want something now, man. Then they talk about me. Would be lost without me. We could have been somebody. Thought you'd be different about it. Now I know you're not it. So let's get on with it. We could have been somebody.
Some people have been scandalized by that song, Blood on the Leaves. Scandalized that a black artist as erudite as Kanye West could take Nina Simone's version of Strange Fruit and turn its devastating metaphor for lynched slaves into a whine about difficulties he's having with the women in his life. The album is shot through with sex, talk about how much the singer likes it, but also how much he uses it as yet another power strategy. But scandal is what West uses as a come-on before diving deeper. His tabloid romance with Kim Kardashian is, whatever their private relationship may be, practically designed to drive serious people nuts. How could, the feeling goes, one of the most gifted of contemporary performers find satisfaction with a reality TV star? Yet this is the way West likes his art, superficially messy, only to reveal itself as rigorous, something joyous or tortured, and which invariably proves more complex than it appears. Give the man some croissants, will ya?
Ken Tucker reviewed Yeezus by Kanye West. Coming up, Carl Hiaasen talks about Florida and its strange characters, and his new novel, Bad Monkey. This is Fresh Air Weekend. This is Fresh Air Weekend. I'm David Bianculli, in for Terry Gross. Our next guest, Carl Hiaasen, is a native of Florida and a longtime columnist for the Miami Herald. He's a humor writer who's become a go-to guest for TV journalists when something big happens in the Sunshine State. He's some combination of cultural ambassador, social critic, and voice of doom, railing against greedy developers, corrupt politicians, and hordes of outsiders who come to plunder the state's natural riches. Hyacin has written a series of delightful mystery novels set in Florida, and also some children's books. His novel Striptease was made into a film starring Demi Moore, and his 1986 book, Tourist Season, was described as the first book about sex, murder, and corruption on the professional bass fishing circuit. Carl Hyacin's latest novel is set in Key West. It's a funny and offbeat murder mystery involving, as usual, some interesting Florida characters in outlandish situations. It's called Bad Monkey. Carl Hyacin spoke with Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies earlier this month.
Carl Hyacin, welcome back to Fresh Air. I thought we would begin with having you read us a bit from Bad Monkey. This is the opening of Chapter 4, a description of the main character, Andrew Yancey. You want to just set this up for us?
Yeah, Yancey was a detective with the Monroe County Sheriff's Office, which is the Florida Keys, and due to some misbehavior, he got busted down to what's called the Roach Patrol, which is basically he's now inspecting the kitchens of various restaurants for vermin. And so it's somewhat not a lateral career move, and he's coping with it the best he can, and that's just how we start. Yancey received his first bribe offer at a tin-roofed seafood joint on Stock Island called Stoney's Crab Palace, where he had documented 17 serious health violations, including mouse droppings, rat droppings, chicken droppings, a tick nursery, open vats of decomposing shrimp, lobsters dating back to the first Bush presidency, and, on a tray of baked oysters, a soggy condom. The owner's name was Brennan. He was slicing plantains when Yancey delivered the feared verdict. "I gotta shut you down. $100 says you won't." "Jesus, is that blood on your knife?" "Okay, $200, said Brennan. "Why aren't you wearing gloves?" Yancey asked. Brennan continued slicing. "Nilsson never gave me no trouble. He ate here all the time. And he died of hepatitis. He ate for free. That was our deal. 6 years, never once did he step foot in my kitchen. Nilsson was a good man." "Nilsson was a lazy whistle," Yancey said. "I'm writing you up."
And that is our guest, Carl Hyacin, reading from his new novel, Bad Monkey. You know, you've written so much about Florida. In some respects, you're kind of a cultural representative of the state almost, I suppose. It's a big place with a lot of different regions. And, you know, Key West is different from Miami. You want to talk a little bit about Key West and its, you know, what, cultural vibe?
Well, I mean, Key West, I've always had a fond spot in my heart for Key West. It's very different from Miami. It's very different from the Panhandle, way different from Central Florida. It's been a pirate outpost since the 1800s. It was an area that at the turn of the century, I mean the 19th century, turning to the 20th century, it was the wealthiest city per capita in the United States because of the treasure salvaging business. It existed on the sort of the plunder of ships that went aground on the reefs in Key West. And so it's always attracted, if you go back to Hemingway, you go back, you know, I mean, it's attracted characters and outlaws and brigands from the early days. And it still does to some extent. Certainly it was huge in the drug smuggling trade in the 70s and 80s. And it's always sort of had laws of its own. And it's just a very, very colorful and diverse place to write about.
Right. And for folks that don't know the geography, I mean, it is among the Florida Keys, this little string of islands that extend out from the bottom of Florida. It's the very last one.
Yeah, and it has the famous southernmost point in the United States, a little strip of beach with some sort of marker there that you can go get your picture taken. And it's, you know, and now, of course, they have cruise ships coming in, and that plays a bit of a part in Bad Monkey.
Right. And the murder plot begins with the very first paragraph of the book, with your permission, I'll just read it.
Okay.
On the hottest day of July, trolling in dead calm waters near Key West, a tourist named James Mayberry reeled up a human arm. His wife flew to the bow of the boat and tossed her breakfast burritos. In that lovely passage, we get a Carl Hyacin kind of classic, I suppose, a grisly image of a crime and also a good laugh. Where did the severed arm come from?
Well, there's even a line in the novel that refers to the for years, South Florida was sort of the severed body parts capital of North America. I mean, this was back, you know, in the drug wars and in the days before that, the mob wars. I mean, we were one of the early vacation spots for all of the five crime families from New York. So we have plenty of experience with severed body parts, and they turn up all the time, and they go into the morgue, and they're cataloged. And in this case, it was just a day of fishing And initially, the thought is that this was a boating accident, and somebody had drowned, and the shark had taken the rest of the body, which is normally what you would guess in a situation. It doesn't turn out that way, but that's initially what everybody thinks. But, of course, that isn't the way it is in this story.
Right. And one of the things that you describe is that there's a lot of, you know, charter fishing out there, and this happens on a charter fishing boat. And I wonder if this is true, that some of these companies have a way of scamming some gullible sports fisherman into thinking he's caught a sailfish. Does this really happen?
Well, this happened once, and the Miami Herald wrote about it. And in fact, we sent a fake guy out on the boat to pretend he was fishing. We had another boat watching it happen. And this was years ago, but it's an absolutely true story. It was called the dead sailfish scam. And what it was is they would load up the boat with usually very, very gullible tourists. And a mate would provide a distraction, say he'd see something on the other side of the boat. Hey, look over there, there's a school of dolphin, or there's a whatever. And while he was doing that, another mate would reach into the icebox and pull out a sailfish that had been caught long ago, hook him on the line, let him loose in the back, you know, just kind of release it into the back of the boat, and then shout, "Fish on, fish on." And somebody would run back and reel in this limp, dead remains of a sailfish, which, of course, never jumps the way the sailfish are supposed to. But they were able to recycle this a fair number of times if you had a dumb enough customer. And the reason they did it was because they got a commission on the taxidermy. They would send the dimensions into a taxidermy shop. And at the end of the day, the guy was so thrilled to have caught a sailfish, he'd write a check, and the boat would pocket part of the check. So that was the scam. And it went on for a while until we wrote about it and took some pictures for the Herald. But it was one of the more brazen and ingenious scams I think I've ever heard about. I mean, it's a great deal of trouble to go to for a $7,500 fish deposit. But at the time, it was just classic South Florida. I mean, it was perfect.
There's a part of the story that takes place in the Bahamas, and there's a woman known as the Dragon Queen. Do you want to describe her and tell us where she came from?
Well, I'll describe her as far as I can. I spent a lot of time over in the Bahamas, and I like it quite a bit over there. I do a lot of fishing over there, but I heard this tale repeated on several visits about a woman who was sort of a black widow figure. Who had at least three of her boyfriends had died under mysterious circumstances after breaking up with her. Fourth had fled to Cuba, and she was a practitioner of voodoo, and the whole island was terrified of her. And I made some efforts to sort of see her house or at least where she lived. I didn't really want to make her acquaintance or take her out for dinner or anything, but I just thought it would be. But I couldn't find anyone who would take me even into the neighborhood. They said they would drop me off and let me walk, and I, being the chicken at heart, and I am, I didn't do it. But I did sort of, I was inspired by the story of this person, and who is still very much alive. So I just sort of shamelessly stole the stories that I'd heard and weaved it into this character who plays a part along with the bad monkey, of course. Now the monkey, I didn't have any particular inspiration for the monkey, but I did know that the Johnny Depp pirate movies were all filmed near this area that I was writing about. And they had a number of monkeys that they used. You know, they have the main monkey, they have a stand-in monkey, they have a stunt monkey. You know, I knew all that, so I just kind of took that idea and ran with it. But my vision of the monkey was of a show business monkey that just crashed and burned and went bad, sort of a Lindsay Lohan of monkeys. And that he got fired from the set of the Pirates of the Caribbean movie and found his way to this island.
Well, right, and you might as well just tell us a little bit more about this particular monkey who goes by the name of Mr. Driggs, right?
Driggs is his name, and you know, he's sort of got a sad story, but he makes his own problems, as most monkeys do. But here's what, you know, in every movie it seems you go to now, in TV sitcoms, and everywhere you look, there's sort of a gratuitous monkey. You know, the Hangover series. And I wanted a monkey with a backstory. I wanted a monkey who's a complete character, who had a literary role in the book. So I just sort of imagined a history for this monkey who was managed, had managers in L.A. and got him to the set in the Exuma Islands to do this movie. And then he does a couple of very bad things on the set of the movie. And he gets himself fired and he ends up on this island.
Right. And the monkey wears diapers, we should mention.
Well, yeah, if you've ever owned a monkey, you know that's pretty important. They're not big on hygiene.
Okay.
I had a monkey briefly myself. I can state that hygiene is not a top priority for the monkey kingdom.
Well, did you enjoy the monkey? How did it work out?
It worked out badly, Dave. It worked out very badly. I was about, this is a true story, maybe 11 or 12 years old, and I looked in the back of one of these outdoor magazines, and it said, pet monkey, $16.95. I didn't tell my mother. I worked around the house. I got the money together, me and my little sister. I sent off for this monkey without really telling her I was doing it. So one day the UPS truck pulls up, or some delivery truck, and this crate comes off, and there's this incredibly pissed off monkey on it. And so I was afraid. No one really would go anywhere near the crate. That was the monkey's state of mind when he got there. And my little brother was about 4 years old, said to me, "Hey, can I pet the monkey?" And being a bigger brother, I said, "Absolutely. Go ahead, pet the monkey." And it just bit the hell out of my brother. And just chawed on him for a long time. And so the monkey lasted about 48 hours, and then I don't know where it went.
Sad story. Another sad story.
It was a sad story. But in those days, the good news is you can't order them by mail anymore. So.
Okay. So, you know, your journalistic career covers a period in which Florida has been, well, I don't want to use the term invaded, but, you know, it is a state that is, you know, certainly at times of year, so full of tourists and retirees. Have you reconciled yourself to outsiders and their role in the state?
Well, I mean, you use the word invaded. I think it's too mild. I use the word trampled, stampeded is what I usually use. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, the population since I was born in 1953, the population has more than quintupled in this state. And try to imagine any place absorbing that kind of population change and the transformation that you would watch if you lived here. I mean, it's traumatic. And have I reconciled? I have no illusions about. I mean, I've been writing for 40 years trying to scare people out of this place, and I haven't done a very good job of it. I get letters from people all the time saying, "I love your books. Please don't hate me, but I'm moving to Florida anyway."
You know, the other thing that I've always thought about Florida is that it must be so frustrating that when it's beautiful outside, the place can be overrun with people that you wish weren't there. I mean, when I went to Delray Beach to visit my in-laws years ago, you couldn't get into the parking lot at the grocery store because there were these people. And then in the summer, when the population shrinks, dreadfully hot, I would think. It's kind of a dilemma,
isn't
it?
It is hot, but I mean, I grew up in that heat. I don't mind the heat at all. But you're right. There is this dichotomy, and you do, and there, it's beautiful. Well, when you travel a little bit, like I do, and you're up north in the cold and the rain and the sleet, you understand why people can't wait to get on a plane to come to Florida. I get it. Everybody understands it. But it's true. I know Delray. I know the parking lot experience. I know the grocery store experience. I had a friend of mine who used to manage one of those big grocery store Publix. And he would come. He had the greatest stories about fist fights and brawls over the pickles, and the slip and falls were classic. They had to put this was back in the day, and they had to put up video cameras because they had old people that would come in on a regular basis and fall down on purpose and sue the store, and they knew who they were. So they started videotaping them as soon as they came in because they knew they were just looking for a place to pretend to fall, do a flop, you know, do a LeBron right there, you know, right in the front entrance of the store. And it was just classic Florida. Who else does this? You know, where you go, let's go to the grocery store and stage a lawsuit. Oh, great. Now, how about that? And then we can pick up dinner while we're there.
One more character from the book I'd like to hear you describe. Evan Shook. Our protagonist, Andrew Yancey, lives near the water, and he had this nice view of the sunset until this character, Evan Shook, comes in. Tell us about him.
We've all had this, maybe not, but many of us in Florida have had this experience. Andrew Yancey is on his policeman's salary now, his roach inspector's salary. He's got a modest little place on a beautiful island called Big Pine Key. It's actually a fairly big island, and the chain of the Keys on the way to Key West. And all he lives for is this sunset every day. You just sit on the deck and you watch the sun go down over the Gulf of Mexico, and tranquility ensues. And this guy buys this lot next to him and decides to build a spec house. He has no intention of living there himself. Evan Shook doesn't. But his idea is to build a gigantic house and sell it for a lot of money and finance his future separation from his wife. And so the house starts going up, and of course it's much larger, taller than the code, the building code and the keys allows. This is no impediment to anyone resourceful enough in the keys to face that problem, because there's lots of buildings that are bigger when they're built than they were on paper. And so Yancey just fumes, and he embarks on sort of a subtle commando campaign to discourage Evan Shook from fulfilling his dream.
Yeah, and there's some very funny stuff there. But again, there's a theme here, which is folks in Florida make money as they choose to, and, you know, regulation is kind of spotty.
Yeah, well, in the Keys, it's always been a little loose. But the point is that everybody there is there because they love the natural beauty of the place. And it may be just a little sliver of beauty. It may just be this view or that view. But then someone comes along who has no natural love for the Keys or for anything except making dough, and he just throws up this monstrosity of a structure, and while most of us would just fantasize about sabotage, Yancey puts it into motion.
Right. I gather you must spend some time on the water.
Yes, every spare minute I can, I'm on the water. I mean, it's a very tranquil sort of thing, and it takes you back to a time when it was. That was the principal, you know, way to get around was by boat or canoe or dugout or whatever it was. The Seminole Indians traveled by water, and it's still a very peaceful thing. I mean, as I said, I go down to the Keys a lot, and I can get in my boat. I have a small skiff, but I can get back in the backcountry and the places where you may not see another boat for a whole day, or if you do, it's just at a distance, and you're just out there, and there's dolphins, there's sawfish, there's turtles everywhere, and you're thinking, this must have been what it looked like when they first got here. And that's a pretty cool thing, and that's not true everywhere, but it also gives you something to fight for. It's the reason that you don't give up despite all the madness and the insanity and the corruption, which is just, you know, multiplying with each new generation of arrivals.
Well, Carl Hyacin, it's been fun to have you again. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Carl Hyacin speaking with Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies. Hyacin's new novel is called Bad Monkey. Fresh Air Weekend was produced by John Sheehan. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer and technical director is Audrey Bentham. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Salad, Phyllis Myers, Roberta Sharrock, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Myers, Heidi Simon, and Teresa Madden. Our administrative assistant is Dorothy Farabee. Nell Beschenstein is our associate producer for online media. For Terry Gross, I'm David Bean Cooley.